Welcome. You're listening to Refusing to Implode Politely, a show all about London spoken word, with me, Zoe Stegosaurus.
This poem is called If My Body Was a Poem, and it's on YouTube right now. If my body was a poem, it would be short. Would laugh too loud, hold the microphone too close. If my body was a poem, the audience would not be still. Would writhe and jive and shake and break, would shudder. If my body was a poem, it would be experimental. Not quite sure where each stanza ends because ends are too definite. And my body only knows flow, does not stop start. No, my body is an express train. And so it would express and be expressive all the same, but it would never get to a point. If my body was a poem, it would not have any points. Some bones protrude, but smooth skin smooths over any sharp spears. If my body was a poem, it would be painted by privilege, shaped by social class, imbued with 50 shades of sexism. If my body was a poem, it would not growl at the audience or hold any weapons. It has already seen too many wars. If my body was a poem, there would be moments of silence, days where the duvet is its only companion. If my body was a poem, it would lie less, words more honest than gendered growths that mark my chest, and this waste is wasted under big shirts that hide the best parts. If my body was a poem, I could cut out all the parts I don't like, edit away the clumsy, the awkward, the bits that bang door frames. If my body was a poem, I'd probably be more proud of it. I used to put this body on a stage every night, but I never shared more than what it looked like. How the frame sings in curves and creaks, speaks louder than parties on Saturday night streets. It is the treehouse of my childhood, the used car of my adolescence. The rocking chair of my old age, it is both a vessel and an essence. And so maybe my body is already a poem. It shares stories with my mouth closed, introduces itself before I get the chance. My body is the first line of dialogue, and it is dying to meet you. My body knows twirl, knows torture, knows twerk. It is equally my best and my worst work. My physicality is free verse that refuses to behave. In the end, this is the poem I'll still be writing from my grave.
Hello, Maddie. Welcome to Canon Community Radio. Today I'm joined in the studio by Maddie Godfrey, which is really something very special for me because she's one of the two or three poets that the first time I ever saw them live, I went instantly, right, this is a hero of mine.
Oh.
So
it's really sweet. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. we're gonna talk a little bit about your work, a little bit about your life. Let's kick straight off. I would like to ask you first a little bit about your poetic method, your motivation. Why do you write poetry? How do you write poetry?
So I'm from Perth. I'm from Western Australia, and when I first started writing, they called me a word spewer. Like, that was the thing that was in all my bios and that I was kind of half teased, half praised for, in the fact that I don't really plan poems ever. I don't really ever write knowing where it's going to go. All my poems are literally come out stream of consciousness. From probably the ones you've heard on YouTube to the ones you'll never hear, they are all literally just me writing and writing and writing until they come out. And I don't really edit either. Mm. Which I agree is a weakness. I think it's kind of nice to just give audiences and people I'm sharing with like the raw poem. Yeah. I don't like editing because I feel like it takes away some element of me, like the me that's in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So amazing. My writing process is literally just word spewing. It's just getting it out. I feel like my brain is always writing three or four poems in the back. Even right now, like I feel like my brain is always writing poetry, which is crazy and full on and a little bit intense, but it's also quite exciting to know that there's things happening right now.
Very exciting. Cool. That's very, very impressive. I don't know many people who don't edit and come out with stuff that's as on form as your stuff, so that's really wonderful.
You.
And And so why poetry? Why isn't your brain writing novels?
I have a short string of attention, maybe. I don't have the patience to stick with an idea for that many pages, I think.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like this is the medium that just felt most natural to me always. I mean, I wasn't always a poet. I haven't been doing this for very long at all, in fact. I feel like I've always written poetry, but I don't think I did it seriously and with intent until I did a class at uni called Experimental Writing with someone called Alan Boyd. This is in Perth, Western Australia. Someone called Alan Boyd, who's also known as the anti-poet, whose motto... Can I swear? Is that allowed?
Try. See what happens. You did in your poems.
His motto is fuck shit up. And that's what we were told to do in the unit. And you got 10% extra if you performed a poem or got a poem published in that semester. So, of course, being a total nerd and wanting to be a high achiever and et cetera, I was like, yeah, I will perform a poem. So I went to somewhere called The Moon in Perth, The Moon Cafe, and went to somewhere called the Perth Poetry Club and performed a poem. And it was incredible. And my dad came and I got hooked. But from there, I think there's an element of I liked the performance bit. And I couldn't perform a novel. I mean, I could try. I don't think it would be as exciting or enjoyable.
Yeah.
But I love that, the theatre of it. I love the theatre of performance poetry and the interactiveness of it and getting to tell stories and have your audience right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I really thrive on that. I think even when I perform to a microphone, I still do hand actions and body movements and facial expressions. It's just so intricate in the way I write, and it's so... Yeah, I write for performance, I think, now at least, to an extent.
Yeah, I get that. Like, even if I'm writing something that doesn't ever end up on stage or is a bit too close to my chest to really be shared with people, then it kind of comes through that, like, how does it sound? How do I gesture to this? How do I kind of perform it in a weird way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I recently did a workshop with Deanna Rogers, and she was saying we need to walk around while we write because we need to feel the poem. And I really agree with that, like this idea of feeling the poem. And I think you can feel a page poem, definitely, or a poem that's on a page. There's this whole discussion about like what is page poetry, what is performance poetry, and I think they really do overlap. And I think you can write for both, and I think you can appropriate things for both depending on how you lay them out.
Yeah.
But I think all poems should be felt in some way. And the body is such a thing for feeling and a thing for experiencing that you need to write through your body to some extent to have it resonate with the reader or the audience. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the next level of honesty.
Mm.
You kind of put it in, all of yourself goes into it rather than just the kind of mental processing or you know, the heart and everything. But actually being there to give it as well is a big thing.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And so you started this, you said you started with this university course. How many years ago was that?
Oh, goodness. That would have been, what year are we in? 2006. That was the end of 2014. It was September. I performed the first time in September 2014. Do you want me to go through the journey with you?
Please go through your journey, because that's no time at all.
It's a bit strange.
And you've come so far.
So basically, the end of 2014, I did this unit called Experimental Writing, performed for the first time at The Moon. My teacher has a son called Jacob Boyd, who is also known as the Laundry Man. I met Jacob at a house party and he was doing poems. And I was like, hey, I did your dad's class. You're Jacob, right? And he was like, oh, yeah. And he sort of knew about me because his dad had mentioned me to some extent. I was like the top student and was effing shit up like he wanted to be done. Basically, Jacob then published some of my poems in a zine he was working on called the Department of Poetry Zine. That was coming out pretty regularly at this point. I started going to an event called Spoken Word Perth, and it all really just snowballed from there until The Moon, where I first performed, got me on as a feature.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really exciting to be given 10 minutes paid, my first ever paid poetry performance. And that was Valentine's Day 2015. Which I remember because I was like, oh, I love poems, and just avoided love for my whole set.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautiful. And then I went on to win my first slam in March of that year with a poem I wrote on the day, which was Consent, which you may have heard.
Yep.
It's quite well known. And so I won that slam. I got another feature from there. And then it just sort of kept snowballing, and then I ended up taking over as a host of Spoken Word Perth for a while, and that really became my baby, and I was doing that fortnightly, hosting and organising and performing at it. And then I went on to win the Perth Slam, which was huge because it sent me to the Sydney Opera House to compete and perform. But the week after I won that, I left for Oxford in the UK, so I left the country. And then had to fly back from Oxford to the Sydney Opera House, which was a bit stupid, but also I figured it was the opportunity of a lifetime, and it was very much worth the 30-hour trip. So then I flew back after that, had the best experience, one of the best experiences of my life. Flew back to the UK, performed in Oxford, eventually moved to London, started performing in London, started winning slams in London, then just decided kind of on a whim to go participate in the Women of the World Poetry Slam in Brooklyn, New York, which is like, I think, 92 of the best poets in the world. And that was just like bizarre and incredible and life-changing and so empowering, so utterly empowering. Like, I was so proud to be me when I got back from that trip.
Oh, yeah. That's such a lovely thing to say.
Yeah. And then came back to London and just sort of kept doing things. So, yeah, that's a brief sort of journey.
I love that it's come, you know, it's a journey. Obviously, it's an emotional journey. It's a kind of spiritual growth kind of journey.
Yeah.
It's a journey of geographical kind of massive portions. And, like, also, I mean, intellectually, I guess, and how has your writing style developed since the start as a result of all of this amazing stuff?
It's really interesting that we talk about an Australian style. My style first started off as really experimental and really like playing with sounds. My first poem that I performed was called Toxicity, and it was very like rhymey and hard-hitting, and it was like, you know, we are sleeping with these screens, these sickly screens, and this banger of a line which goes like, my parents are having an affair with the glare coming from their screens. So like, which I actually ended up printing in my zine pamphlet chapbook thing. I ended up printing that as one of the earliest poems because I wanted to show where I came from and where I started. And I think that's really funny. It would definitely start off with a lot of sound-based stuff, a lot of rhyme. I think I originally used that as a safety net. Like, if I write these things and they rhyme or they fit in a structure or they have this wordplay and they're really, you know, technically great, then they're poetry, right? And I think the more I performed and the more I started to really put myself into the poems, the further away from that they got, which is really interesting to consider that I was sort of using rhyme as a crux. And then I look at a poem like Consent, so the one that was my first slam poem I ever performed and won with, and the one that got me to Sydney, which was incredibly personal and hard to write and still hard to perform, but it rhymes. And I find that really interesting that it has a very nursery rhyme sort of thing. And I think once again that was safety, that it was like, I'm going to talk about this thing that like rips me inside and is hard for me to share, but it sounds so pretty, you know. It was, yeah, so I look back at that and I'm like, I've come so far. But I also know that I needed that. I needed that journey to get to where I am now, where I can write pieces that don't rhyme and be like, oh, they're still worth something. Also, I think London has changed my style a lot. London is really quite grungy with its style and definitely has a rap influence, which I don't use in a lot of my poems. Some of them definitely, but I think all the places I've gone, all the voices I've heard, I hear them in my own poems, you know, because the more poetry you absorb,
you can't help it.
Yeah. And it comes out through your own words. So, yeah, it's changed a lot, my style, but there's always been an honesty. I've never been able to write something I don't know or haven't experienced or aren't close to. Yeah.
And that's, I connect with that about your work, the fact that it is, on the one hand, so personal and grounded in something that you know, you're directly describing an experience. And also, it's speaking about a universal thing. It's talking to so many people and describing an experience that people have daily, essentially. You know, not in every case, obviously, but in a lot of cases. So you said London had a kind of grungy style.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about this city. I want to talk to you about your relationship to this city. And what do you mean by grungy style in poetry? And also, you know, it feels to me a little bit like you and love and hate London. Would you agree with that? What's going on?
Yeah. When I was away, so I just came back from Perth. I went for my first visit home since I left last September, which was strange, just strange to be back in my like childhood bed on one hand and also back in my old poetry scene. So both lovely and terrifyingly awkward in some ways. Mm. But basically I got this perspective on London with the distance. And I started thinking of London as like this almost like abusive lover that, you know, just hurts and is hard to deal with and is hard to come home to. But also there's that addiction. There's that thing where I want to come home to them. Mm. And I want to, you know, lie in bed and tell London about my day. And I want to go out with London and see the worst of it. And I'm still so in love with it. I think London, a lot of people describe it as like a soul-sucking place, which is interesting. And something I identify with on the bad days. But it's also so full of soul. And it's so alive. And I don't feel so at home in any other city I've been to. I expected, like when I went to New York, I was like, oh, this will be the same sensation I have in London, this whole like almost electric sense of life and movement and activity. But no, London is it for me. Like London is just, I feel so much part of the city. And when I'm not in London, I want to be in London. I feel like I'm missing out on life. And I still, like, I love Perth. It's where I grew up. It's where my home is and my family is. But when I was in Perth, I knew I had to come back to London. When I return to London, it asks me how long I can hold my breath for. I tell the city that I invented drowning, that I knew the ocean when it was only limbs, not yet a body, that could not swallow, only spit or spray. I tell London that I knew the ocean way back when it was sinking to, before the waves and the wildlife. I tell London that I have seen how wonder looks before others glance its way, how a universe looks when it is still an atom, how all humans still sway like windscreen wipers on days there is no storm. When I return to London, the city does not ask where I have been. It is an abusive lover I will leave, then come home to, only to count each bruise like a new bedtime story. The city asks if I have learnt to run in my sleep. I ask it if the ocean sleeps. I do not say I am the ocean, but I mean I am going to make waves. I am going to crash again and again and still thrash like nothing has happened. I am going to bubble over while everyone watches. I am going to scream until the seagulls arrive to offer assistance. And I will drown in myself, just like the ocean does each night before the sky resuscitates it. I will hold my breath just to remember how good oxygen tastes in desperate lungs, because one day the ocean will say that it knew me when I was only limbs, not yet a body. This next poem is called Little Sister. It is for my favourite person in the whole world, and their name is Alex Biddle, and they're a poet as well. Probably a better poet than me, let's be honest. My little sister plays with matches like they're Barbie dolls. Ignites them just to watch flames curl towards her fingers. So I follow her with an extinguisher. Use my body as a blanket. Even in her absence, I still throw myself at flames because there are fires all around these days. On the television, the magazines, the buses that pass, the books she reads. So I have to stay alert, reach those sparks first so her matches don't become flares and burns on a hand-me-down we share. The other day, I was walking down a street curb when three strangers spat embers shaped like words. These spiteful tags were heavy bags of verbal groceries that I carried home with me, only to swallow them like a fire eater, for the letters singe my throat with S-L-U-T. with W-H-O-R-E. These words defined my sexuality. It's all about how I stand, how I dance. It's cake-faced chicken fillets, leggings aren't pants. It's feminism defined by repetitive rants. It's a group of people treated like ants that society burns with their spectacles, using mirrors to create a spectacle. Forget Burning Man, let's watch girls become flames until ash and pain are all that remains. A carcass of femininity identified by shame. When will we stop using female sexuality as a slur? When will the word cunt be celebrated, the stigma castrated? When will my body stop being public art? When will the fire cease? When will the rain start? To wash away the dirt from terms like hussy, pussy, tramp. You see, I'm trying to reclaim these phrases as a compliment, a stamp that says my body is a gift. Not a penalty or prize. It cannot be paid for in currency or eyes. And no matter how I use it, how I move it, what I wear, my sensuality is not a fire. It's a warmth I've learned to share. And my sister, her body is not a temple or a shrine. It's an explosive work of art built one brushstroke at a time. And it's been charred around the edges, but she loves it all the same. She refuses to be set alit by someone else's flame. I live in Southwest London, so I live in Zone 3. Well, it's like borderline Zone 3, Zone 2 with poets, and we've created a little haven. And I think that helps because, you know, when London gets too harsh and too isolated, I get to walk into a home with people I love and just like crawl into my little bed and know that I'm have that home and that sanctuary in this crazy city.
Yeah. The personal in the midst of the quite impersonal a lot of the time.
Yeah, definitely.
So I want to come back in and talk to you about what you're doing at the moment poetry wise, what you can disclose, of course. Tell me a bit about your projects that are going on at the moment and also recent achievements. What are you happy about at the moment?
Goodness. Recent achievements.
Don't pretend to struggle.
No, so it's weird. It's a weird question for me. Like, I was like, in my head, I was like, wait, how do I want to address that? Because, I mean, I can talk about the slams. Like, I came second in a slam the other day. I'm competing in the Oxford Hammer and Tongue Slam final next week. I've won a lot of slams lately. Yeah. You've been there at quite a few of them. I don't need to list them. You can go to my website. No, I don't even have a website. I have a Facebook page, but they're on there.
That counts.
Yeah. So I've won things in Cambridge, Oxford, all around London. I recently won the Perth Slam again, which was fun and exciting and amazing because it was just an atmosphere thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Back to the Sydney Opera House then?
No, that was like a heat. Okay. But also if I wanted to be at the Sydney Opera House, I'd have to go back in like September and then win again, which I feel like it's someone else's turn this year.
Yeah.
I've done that. I've had the experience. I want to give it to someone else. Mm. I have my favorites, but I'm not going to say them. But achievement-wise, like it's a weird question because I can do that list, that very formal list of this is what I've won and this is where I've been published, which is I'm proud of those things. But I'm more proud of other things.
Like the muffins you bake. The people you make smile. I get
muffins.
It.
I can't bake, Zoe. Come on.
You can't bake. Anyone can bake.
I can bake like vegan treats that are really weirdly healthy.
That's more impressive.
Thank you.
I get what you're talking about with the kind of formal achievements versus stuff that you do, because actually at the moment I've just been inspired to write a poem that is like my real CV.
Not the
official stuff, but the unofficial stuff. So whatever you want to talk about.
I put a post on Facebook the other night after a Spoken in London's event. The one, I think you were there as well. It was a slam. Someone said to me after the event, lovely person, nothing against them, disclaimer. They said, I really like what you're doing. I think you've got the whole package. You're really going to make it. I was walking home and I was like, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? I wrote this Facebook post, which basically said, like, what does it mean to make it right now? Like, the other night I got to stand on a stage. I got to do 3 rounds of poetry, perform 3 poems. I got approached by a couple of women in the toilet who were really touched by what I'd said. And, you know, I get to have this voice and I get to be listened to. And I know there's further to go. And I know there's so much I want to do and so much yet to do. But to some extent, like, I do feel like I've made it. As much as I do every time I get to perform, and every time someone comes up to me after. I do a lot of pieces on rape culture. Not a lot. I do a few pieces on rape culture that have become well-known. One of them went viral in February, which was hard. But also, I got approached by a lot of victims, and I got a lot of messages from victims, and I still get these on Facebook and in my email. And I feel like, if I do nothing else in my life from now on, like, I'm 20, I'm really young, but if I do nothing else in my life from here on, I've given some people a voice when they feel like they didn't have it anymore. And that's usually what the messages are. They're like, you know, you've given me volume in a place that I only had silence. Mm. And so when people talk about, like, your achievements, my achievement is I've changed the world a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's means more to me than any slam title or published thing. Like, I just want to create positive change and, you know, nurture love and expression and honesty. And I think that's my biggest achievement, is that I've been able to do that at 20. Yeah. That's freaking cool, and I'm very excited and stoked on that.
Mm.
Yeah.
We actually probably have to wrap up very soon, sadly, because this is awesome. But tell me, firstly, anything upcoming that we should watch out for you?
I should probably mention I am still running a 30-30.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about 30-30. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
It's crazy. It's fabulous and crazy and bizarre that I started this in April. So, like, April 30-30 is a big thing all over the world. You have, there's a thing?
National
NaPaRIMO? NaPaRIMO, which is basically UK-based. But there is 30-30 in other places. And I was like, oh, I'm going to start a 30-30 Facebook group because it motivates me to write and post it somewhere. I did a 30-30 in January as well, but, like, didn't really share it with anyone. And then I kind of lost the pieces because they weren't all in one place. So I was like, we'll do this April 30-30. And it started off with me and, like, 10 other people, really small. And then it just grew to, like, 30 or 40 people who were posting every single day. And it was all poetry at that point. And it became this community. So people at events, at Boomerang especially, I remember Hannah and Harry and a couple of other people, Dan, getting up and being like, I'm part of Maddie's 30-30 and performing these incredible pieces. And I was so proud to be part of this, like, secret community, which isn't really secret, but this community. I felt like doing another one this month in June. So I was like, guys, call out 30-30. And it has grown ridiculously. It's now on 99 people as of today. And they've now made it multimedia. So we have musicians, artists, photographers.
Bookbinders.
Bookbinders. Someone made a bracelet. Like, it's just create stuff every day for 30 days.
So
but people are also starting now. Like, there's, like, I saw a guy yesterday who was on 1 out of 30.
Yeah.
So he's obviously starting mid-month. And I'm totally cool with that. But how wonderful we get this place of creative people who are supporting each other and critiquing each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if anyone wants to be part of it who's listening, like, please find me on Facebook, add me, or Zoe, and we'll add you to the group.
Yes.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's so great. I've learned so much about my process. I've learned so much about the things that inspire me, and also about, like, how to find poetic meaning in my daily, you know, blah, blah.
Yeah.
What I'm doing.
I'm doing prompts right now. Like, I've been doing prompts for everyone every day, which is new for me as well. Trying to find a prompt every day has also been a challenge, which I've quite enjoyed.
Mm.
Yeah, because I write every day no matter what. The hard thing about 30-30s for me is getting an edited, public, readable piece every day is the hard bit. I write every day. Most of it's a bit, but trying to get something a little bit polished.
Yeah. But not too polished as well. Like, it's so open, and, like, people always post, like, so this is really raw, but tell me what to do with it, guys.
Yeah.
And that's great.
I posted like an essay the other day.
It was so good.
People read it.
It was amazing. I read it and then I was like, I have to read that again. Like, it was, oh.
I got messages from someone in Melbourne who was like, Maddie, that piece. And I was like, why are you reading it? yeah, but they've got people from America, Australia, and England in the group. Mm. And hopefully it'll get wider. But it's, yeah, it's exciting. And they're all so talented. Like, no one, like, oh, they're so talented.
So it's such a beautiful thing. Join us, guys.
Join us.
Final thoughts. Final thoughts, Maddie.
Think some things and say them. Think some things. I have this like secret project where I'm working on a fringe show, which is beautiful and exciting, and will be using all of my talents.
Hey.
So yeah, I'll be on a pole for some of it. Awesome. That's my other passion, pole dancing. And it's about sort of body politics. And the body, and it's going to use poetry to have a conversation and tell stories while also using my body to tell stories. So I'm really excited about that. Stay tuned. That'll be 2017. Probably Perth. Maybe Edinburgh. Hopefully everywhere. World domination. Mm-hmm. what else? I think that, what else do you want me to talk about? Just poetry. Poetry.
Whatever you fancy. I mean, these are final thoughts. They get final to be thoughts. Whatever they are.
I think it's important to not consider poetry in a vacuum. The prompt for today was write about a news story or something in the news. And I think that it's important to consider poetry as something that can do things and cause change and be active. Like, poetry is a vehicle, not just as something that sits in the back of the vehicle and doesn't come out. Like, poetry as a way to say important things. And I guess that's what I'm trying to do. Hopefully we'll be able to do is that I don't just want to be a poet, like, who writes beautiful things. I want to use poetry to do things, to whether that's social activism or create change or bring people together. Mainly bring people together right now. Like, I want to be able to use writing to create communities and support and empowering communities. And I love that. I love that element of poetry, like, that honest friendships
yes.
can be formed so quickly. I think that's really important, which you've probably found from poetry, yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the best things about the community, I think.
Mm.
It's really special.
Thank you so much for coming in. It's been a real pleasure. I'm sorry this couldn't go on for three times as long, but we need to get out of here. This has been Maddie Godfrey. She's amazing. How do we find you if we want to?
Facebook is the easiest way. So it's www.facebook.com/Maddie Godfrey Poet. Also, you can just Google me.
Cool.
Which is exciting. My mum loves that.
She
thinks I'm famous because I'm Googleable. I'm on YouTube and Facebook and various online blogs and stuff.
Fantastic. We'll leave you with just one more piece of Maddie's. Thank you for listening.
This poem is called Labels Are for Jars. It's been published by Voicemail Poems, who are a great little organization in the US. My dad is a mathematician. He raised me as a Venn diagram, called me half boy, half girl. We watched Quentin Tarantino and Tomb Raider. He taught me how to shave my legs like he shaves his face. The day I got my hair cut off, he asked, "Do you still look like a girl?" I think he hoped I would maintain the mirror reflection that kept me the same, a souvenir of similarity that aesthetically feminized me. I think my dad knew early that I never suited a binary, and so he acted as father and son. Puberty was not fun. I felt like my body betrayed the censored secrets I fleed. You can't be a Venn diagram once you start to bleed. Instead, I was two halves that could not be made complete. I was a space within a failed high five where two palms do not meet. If binary was a bathtub, my limbs were too lanky to fit inside, and so like a high school graph, I used colors to distract and hide. I was taught you can't bend gender. It is ruled lines on graph paper traced with permanent marker, and so I was marked as her, as female, woman, she, but these labels were hand-me-downs that never quite fit me. I have never felt trapped in my own body, only trapped by what others expect from it. I have never been ashamed of my breasts, only of what they signify. These flesh mounds tell tales, can never keep a secret safe. Gender fluidity is not an equation or a solution. It is the page number that remains unnotable until you need to make a reference. My dad is no longer a mathematician, but he still loves me as a Venn diagram, accepts the space where two circles combine as Lara Croft, as Tarantino, both at the same time.